south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Hey, let's talk about what it takes to leave the USA. You know, there's a lot of tire kickers out there. You know what that means, don't you? Of all the thousands of people listening to this show, I bet around 15, maybe 20% of them actually act and get the hell out of the U.S. and move down to Latin America. Like I said, lots of tire kickers out there. You know, I've been to all 20 Latin countries, many of them a number of times. I've lived in 5 or 6 of them for long periods of time. Even went to Cuba a couple of times. You know, Americans aren't supposed to go there, so you have to fly in from another Latin country or Europe. Hey, and the Cubans aren't dumb, you know. They might be stupid, but they're not dumb. There's a difference. When you land at the Cuban airport and they see you've got a U.S. passport, they don't stamp it. Nope, no entry stamp. Highly unusual. You know, in the last couple of years, the U.S. has loosened its immigration policy with Cuba and then tightened it again, then loosened it, then tightened it. Hard to know where we're at with that now. Maybe these days they will stamp your passport, but maybe not. And of course, the Cuban people and the Cuban government are more than hungry for the U.S. dollar because the Cuban peso can't be converted to any other currency, so they can't buy anything internationally. They've got to use someone else's convertible funny money, U.S. or Canadian dollar, euro, pound, whatever. Oh, and by the way, since Canadians don't have any restrictions against Cuban travel, there's a ton of them in that country just visiting and touring. Anyway, Cubans just love American and Canadian tourists because we tip and tip heavily compared to Europeans, and you'll hear that all the time. Especially German tourists claim to be the second worst tippers of all. The worst tippers? Backpackers. And you know, a $5 tip to a cabbie is a week's wages in Cuba. I'm not kidding. It's a week's wages or more in Venezuela, too. Yep, socialism certainly does equalize everybody. Makes them equally miserable. Unless, of course, you're in the upper echelons of government. Then you get a beach house, an iPhone, and Netflix. So, like I said, I've been to every Latin country. And you know, I've always made a point, whatever new Latin city I'm in, to ask around for the nearest gringo slash expat bar. You know, every Latin city over, I'd say, 20,000 people has at least one of them. Yep, even when you're way off the gringo tourist trail. Hey, that doesn't mean you're going to find a bunch of gringos in there. You might walk in and there's only 2 or 3 scraggly-looking gringos gone native, and some local Latino and Latina hangers-on who speak a bit of English, looking to get their hooks into a gringo for something or other. Oh, and when you're in one of those bars, do take note of who's sipping on a quart bottle of beer. By the way, that's a sure sign of a gringo backpacker or a long-term expat gone native when they're drinking quart bottles of beer. Because, you know, that's the cheapest way to drink here in Latin America. Yep, unlike in the States, all Latin beer companies sell quart bottles. You know, the jumbo economy size, like an all-day sucker. Remember those things? Slowpoke, all-day suckers? Man, showing my age again, I guess. So, note if you pop into a gringo and expat bar, who's drinking out of a quart bottle? And remember, if you pal up to one of those guys, you're more than likely going to end up buying him another or maybe lunch. Because they're drinking on the ultra-cheap and probably don't have the dough to reciprocate. But if you want to pal up, nothing wrong with that. You know, it's a way to meet people if you don't know anyone. Especially if your Spanish sucks and you're desperate for English conversation. That can happen, by the way, but pretty much only when you're off the tourist trail. By the way, when you're way off the gringo tourist trail and you stop into a gringo slash expat bar, like I said, there might be only 2 or 3 gringos in there, but chances are there'll be double or triple the number of European travelers. And you know, I've noticed a few obvious differences between gringo U.S. backpackers and European backpackers. And note, if you're down here long enough, you'll be able to pick them out right away. They have more diverse and stylish tattoos than Americans, and a lot more body piercings. Not only that, they're generally much skinnier than American backpackers. By the way, you rarely see a homemade or so-called prison tat on a European person. They prefer to have an artist do it and spend the dough. Could be that they're smarter and just thinking ahead what that thing's gonna look like 30 years from now. Speaking of dough, seems like all European backpackers are on vacation from really good jobs. They get a month or so off work every year, and they actually like backpacking, unlike Americans who do it because they're cheaper, really are short on dough. Though American backpackers will BS you and tell you how much they love it. The truth is they'd stay in a Hilton in a second if they had that kind of dough. Oh, and here's another thing. European backpackers have funkier beards, goatees, and mustaches, and they're generally more manicured than their American backpacker counterparts. Though often for some reason, even the females seem to reek of BO a lot worse than gringo backpackers, who sometimes don't reek at all till late in the day. I don't know if it's an aversion to deodorant or what, but there's a lot of that going down you'll notice if you take a trip through Europe. Oh, and European backpackers are usually paler, whiter, and they walk with a more determined strut and purpose. Oh, and there's another big difference. European backpackers wear lots of leather. Leather pants, leather purses, leather vests, shoes, sandals, underwear. Hey, whatever turns you on, right? Armbands, headbands, hats. Nope, not the fake stuff. They wear the real thing. Whereas most gringo backpackers have an aversion to wearing animal products. And that is a fundamental difference. European backpackers seem to be just as tuned into, if not more, regarding ecology and saving the planet, etc., but they love wearing leather. Somebody might want to explain that to me sometime. Though that is further proof that Europeans have a lot more disposable income. Real leather is very expensive. Hey, I prefer real leather myself, so sue me. By the way, you'll find most backpackers, gringos, and Europeans don't hang out at expat bars. Not in the daytime or afternoon, anyway. Normally, they've got a purpose. They're going to go climb a mountain, do some hiking, hit the ancient ruins, check out a waterfall, swim in some mystical pool in the jungle, whatever. And generally, at night, when everyone likes to party, backpackers will hang around the communal areas at the various hostels. Any place they can get free Wi-Fi and suck down quarts of beer. But note, backpackers are generally nice communal-type people who share stuff, including, but not limited to, bug spray, sunblock, Imodium, and quarts of beer. Now, as for me, I never stay in a hostel. In fact, when I walk into those places, I won't even sit on the furniture in the sitting area. That stuff's usually so old and ratty and saturated with sweat, coffee, soda, beer, and stale pheromones. You know, organic remnants of 1,000 dysenteric backpackers. That's why if I go into one of those places for whatever reason, I prefer to stand, thank you very much. Now, you might think this is anal. Maybe it is. But when I walk into any Latino's house or public place, and I see they have fabric chairs and sofas, I'll look around for a plastic, wooden, or metal one. Even if it's slightly uncomfortable, that's my preference. Because chances are a maid or a cleaning lady has wiped it down and maybe even disinfected it, hopefully since the new millennium. However, there's no way to delouse, sanitize, or kill the cooties when it comes to fabric furniture in a high-traffic area, especially in the tropics. I know, a lot of you are thinking I'm going overboard on the clean freak stuff. Maybe I had too many biology courses, read too many science books, and looked under the microscope one too many times. But you know, I haven't had Montezuma's Revenge for more than 10 years. Must be doing something right, since most backpackers get a regular dose of it, at least once a month. But I digress. Anyway, let me tell you what usually would happen when I walk into one of these expat slash gringo bars. Usually, the first gringo you come face to face with will say, "Hey, where you from?" They all say that. But so what? It's non-threatening and it works. "Hey bro, where you from?" is the universal icebreaker. And of course, the next line out of a person's mouth is usually, "What brings you way down here?" And you know, if it's 10 or 11 in the morning, everyone in the place is a boozer. And from that you can infer most of them have gone native too. In other words, a little scruffy, look like they slept in their clothes, discolored tooth or two, or even missing one. By the way, that's a 100% sure sign that a gringo's gone native when he flashes the pearly whites and they ain't so pearly or white. And if there's a black hole or two in that grin, you know he's gone native. Because if there's one thing gringos are known for throughout the world is good, strong, white, straight teeth. Yes, us gringos, like no other culture, have a vanity thing on steroids going when it comes to our teeth. Which is why we get an instant negative first impression of anyone who's got a damaged or missing front tooth. Prize fighters and hockey players being notable exceptions. All right, speaking of gringo expat bars going native and quarts of rat gut beer, sometimes, you know, you have to wonder how many tens of thousands of Social Security and disability checks have gone for booze, bar snacks, and tacos here in the third world. Because, you know, if you're down here, especially on the tourist trail, you'll see a lot of older gringos have gone to seed. Which begs the question, why are there so many homeless people or people who've hit the skids in places like Chicago, Detroit, and New York when they're just a Greyhound bus ride away from Houston or Miami? Hey, if I was homeless, I'd definitely want to be in a place that was warm all year round. Wouldn't you? Anyway, when you're down here in Latin America, especially off the gringo tourist trail where there aren't many gringos or expats at all, when you do run into one, suddenly it's old home week, even if you live seven states away from each other. Then comes question number two. What brings you down here? And by the way, rarely will someone be totally honest with you at that point. However, I am because I like to see the reaction I get. I'll say, I'm here because the U.S. is just really f***ed up beyond the point of no return. And generally, if you're talking to a long-term expat, there'll be a little pause. He'll nod his head and say something like, it's sad, but you know, you're absolutely right. Of course, if you say that to a tourist who's just down for a week of sun and fun, you're probably going to get a different kind of look. They're going back. That's their life, and they'd rather not think about it. All right, so you're in Latin America off the tourist trail. You meet a gringo. The first question is, where you from? The second is, what you doing down here? Question number three, how long have you been down here? That's when people's eyes light up. They really can't believe it. 27 years here in Latin America, man, I always win the longevity pissing contest. By the way, ladies, with most guys, everything is a pissing contest. You can blame it on testosterone. So anyway, once you get talking to a gringo you just met, a lot of the time, you start discussing news items and the problems up in the States. And you know, there was a time 20 or 30 years ago when I first took off myself, when the top problems the U.S. had could actually have been fixed. Funny enough, you could say I even tried to do my part to improve the system. Hell, I even share with my brother and another engineer 13 U.S. patents. Hey, I wasn't the inventor. I was just the facilitator. Got lucky, you know. Anyway, inventions like that are supposed to help the common good, right? And you know, you really get a high off the fact you've done something that no one else has done before. But that patent business turned out to be one of the seeds of my undoing. Or I should say my awakening. Because, and get this, I'm talking about 30 years or so ago. I found out I just couldn't send to the U.S. Patent Office, get the paperwork, fill it out, send it back to them with a model to prove that it worked and that it was a brand new idea. Oh, I tried that all right, but the U.S. Patent Office would have none of it. They said I'd have to hire a patent attorney. So at the time, we were looking at 10 grand for the patent attorney, plus around $5,000 for each of 13 patents, a total of about 75 grand. Plus, about 100 hours of paperwork and correspondence with the patent office. Not to mention, we did our homework and found that only about 1 in 20 patents actually gets produced, and only about 1 in 50 makes the originator any real dough. So figure it out. 49 out of 50 patents are just an exercise in spending in dough and burnishing up your self-esteem. Turns out everyone who invents something and goes for a patent thinks it's going to catch on like wildfire. The odds are greatly against you, believe me. Then there are some really stupid patented ideas that make tons of money because the marketing is excellent. Take the clapper, the chia pet, Ginzu knives, the kitchen magician, and the ever so popular in the Yiddish community, pocket circumciser. Just kidding, but who knows, it could be big. Or for that matter, small. So when it comes to non-technical patents anyway, marketing is everything. I mean, look. Somewhere in millions of garages and attics everywhere, even here in Latin America, is a dusty, rusted ab cruncher that made someone, I think it was Ron Popeil, millions of bucks. Meanwhile, right now as we speak, there are lots of lonely little dedicated guys in their garages and basements, cutting and sawing and drilling, making a prototype of something they invented. So pumped up with adrenaline, so gung-ho, until they apply for that patent, find out it's going to cost 20 grand and 100 hours in paperwork. I wonder how many say F it, throw it in the towel and give up. So in my case, or I should say our case, the three of us threw in the dough. And one guy who was a math and engineering professor on the side, he was the guy on our team with a double doctorate. He was the real brains behind the operation, by the way, and volunteered to do the 100 hours of paperwork. And a bit later, by the way, went to work at a top level position at the Canadian Space Agency. I bet you didn't even know they had one. Well, they're really good at one thing. They make robotic arms. In fact, they made the big arm you sometimes see in videos when they show the International Space Station. You know, the arm that launches and retrieves satellites and scoops up space junk and other debris. Well, he went on to be one of the guys in charge of that project. Now, during the patent process, we all got terribly frustrated. All because of the stifling U.S. Patent Office bureaucracy. Now, some of you listeners might know people who have patents or have applied for them, and most likely you've never heard stories like this. That's because about 99 out of 100 patents, that's 99% of them, are inventions, systems, devices, or biological processes, whatever, that were developed by people working in a corporation. Although you may be the inventor or developer with your name on the patent, when you work for any company as an engineer or technical person, you sign away your rights to patents when you get hired. So if you develop or invent something, they pay the patent attorneys, they do the searches, the paperwork, etc. Then shortly after that, the Chinese steal it. You think I'm kidding, right? So anyway, after that patent business was over, just as things were going along quite nicely, suddenly we got a series of IRS audits. Turns out they flag people over and over again who go to a lot of work-related and educational conferences. In other words, they don't like people who travel a lot and write it off, no matter how legitimate it is. So you invent something new, something that'll improve the modern world, and you're stuck in an expensive, uphill, bureaucratic battle. And if that's not enough, often your own government will punish you for it. So if you've got a really good idea and you try to develop it on your own in your garage, attic, or basement, whatever, in many cases, and I've heard 100 stories to that effect, it's either death by 1,000 cuts administered by bureaucrats, or you throw in the towel and you get a job working for the man. But I digress, as usual. Anyway, when having discussions with long-term expats here in Latin America, you'll almost always hear them say their move from the USA was the best thing they ever did. And often, Latinos especially, who can't believe gringos would actually want to move to Latin America, since the Latino tsunami's in the opposite direction. Well, they ask long-term gringos and expats this question all the time. Will you ever go back? And most gringos and expats will say, yeah, I've got friends and relatives up there, sure. But only for a short visit. I'm not going to live there. I live here in Latin America now. Oh, and lately you'll hear many expats say, once they've come back from a visit from the States, they feel genuinely sorry for those fake book addicted iPhone jockey millennials who never known what personal freedom is like or what it's all about. Wait a minute. What were we talking about? Oh yeah, gringos who've gone native. There's no denying if you're down here long enough, you're going to run into a certain number of washed out, scruffy gringo alkies who've gone native. But you'll find most long-term gringos and expats are creative, intelligent, and of course, adventurous. They wouldn't be down here if they weren't. When you leave the U.S., it's a big change, and most people don't like change. That's why it's imperative you get as much boots on the ground time as you can. The more boots on the ground, the more contacts you make, the more confidence you have, and the easier the transition. Now, as for me, I never was one of those lemmings who couldn't make a move without the nanny state's okay. You know, when I left, there was no such thing as a nanny state. At least, no one had coined that phrase yet. Guess we can thank that malignant pussbag Hillary for that, huh? Now, I don't know about you, but I don't want to be owned or controlled by my own big brother country of birth. I want to own my own life, don't you? Make my own decisions, good or bad. Though many dependent people will say they need the government, what would we do without those safety nets? You know what? Safety nets are for bad performers. Tell me, when you go to a circus and you pay your dough, how exciting is it to watch the high wire act when they've got a net under them? Hey, I'm not saying you should drive without a seatbelt here, but that is why pharmaceutical companies have developed drugs like Valium, Prozac, Xanax, and 100 others. The object being to level everybody's mood. Anything to temper life's highs and lows, we can't have that now, can we? And to me, that's not living. How about you? Now leave it to expat Eddie to test the limits. Once in a while, he likes to go out on a deserted road. I've been with him. He'll take off his seatbelt, go about 50 miles an hour over the limit. It's good every once in a while to disable things and get some adrenaline going. As far as I'm concerned, no government's got the right to tell you you can't smoke a cohiba or a joint on your own porch in your underwear if you want to. Which begs the question, is it you or your government that controls your life? Are you going to get that plan B going, or are you just a tire kicker? Hey, everyone said I was crazy when I told them I was moving down for good. Now, that was before cell phones and the internet. And don't think in the early days I didn't look outside my hotel window once in a while and say, hey, was this the right thing to do? By the way, not only were there no cell phones or internet back then, to get a landline phone call to the U.S. sometimes took 3 or 4 times at $1 to $3 a minute. And during those calls, I'd always get cut off, so I'd have to call back again. So naturally, as I got more acclimated to living in Latin America, those phone calls back to the States became less and less frequent. But I left, and I made the move without my parents or my family's okay. They laughed, and my ma cried and said, "You'll be back with your tail between your legs." That is, if I wasn't kidnapped or held for ransom or airlifted on a flight to life with some incurable tropical disease. So when you do come down here, permanently or otherwise, be prepared for 50 questions. Why are you leaving? What are you running from? By the way, I used to say I'm running from people like you. But you know, these days, less and less people are saying, "Why are you leaving?" Because they know how bad it is up there. And strangely enough, and I thought this would never happen, lately at my Expat Insider seminars, I've been having more and more people, that is attendees, who work government jobs. Sure enough, there's a lot of smart people working for government. They know what's up and want to get the hell out too. And most of them tell me it's a tough thing, you know, spending years and years at a job where they have to keep their mouths shut and check their brains at the door. But, you know, everyone's got to make a living. And as the years go by and you get closer and closer to that pension, you don't want to rock the boat and put it in jeopardy. But back to the point. So when I'm traveling and I hit a fresh, new Latin American city or town I've never been in before, like I said, it's been my practice to stop in the local gringo or expat bar. And if it's before noon, you can bet there are some gringo lushes in there, spending their social security and disability checks on booze and bar snacks. And they'll see me, a new gringo, and one of them will pop that "where you from" question. Then comes the "what brought you down to this part of the world" question. Now, sometimes, you know, these guys who have gone native might look like they've hit the skids. But don't let that fool you. Some of them still have quite a lot going on upstairs. Hey, you know, a lot of great artists, philosophers, and writers were stand-up drunks. Look at Hemingway, Barrymore, Bing Crosby, too. In fact, nearly all the most famous writers and poets out of Ireland were hopeless drunks. So you can't really write all these guys off who've gone native. They've all got things to say and great stories, too. All of them are refugees of sort. So am I. But what kind of refugee? Political? Social? Romantic? Eclectic? Artistic refugees? Are they economic refugees? More and more, that's certainly true. Could be all or none of the above, too. Now, you know, refugees leave a place because of some kind of oppression. They've been pushed too far and reached their limit in some endeavor. But most don't leave a bad situation till it's almost intolerably bad, and then they have to leave and don't have a good plan. It's not good to make big decisions under uncertainty, stress, or a lot of pressure. Now, in my case, I planned my move for at least 3 years. I wanted to start fresh, have a tiny footprint, and be as anonymous as possible when I left. So about a year before I made the move, I went to a nearby county, not one I was living in, and I rented one of those used storage units. And back then, you know, you didn't have to give any ID at all. You just paid the deposit and filled out a form. Then, little by little, I started selling off all the excess junk and baggage I had in my house. And the stuff I wanted to keep and I knew I wouldn't be able to buy wherever I was in Latin America, I packed inside the storage unit. Because remember, back then there was no Amazon either, no internet. Which begs the question, how did I know what I could and could not buy in Latin America if there was no way to search it on the internet? Well, I made a few boots-on-the-ground trips before I came down permanently. My first stop, of course, Costa Rica. I mean, hey, what else would a person do way back when, almost 30 years ago, if he wanted to live in Latin America and didn't speak a lick of Spanish? Your choices were either Costa Rica or Belize. Oh, I checked out Belize, all right. Couldn't do that. Not when at least 3 times a week the power would be out for 8 hours or more at a crack. So I had that used storage unit for about a year. I loaded it up with machinery, tools, stuff I knew I couldn't get easily in Costa Rica. And I had my lawyer in Costa Rica ship it down. Yep, I used one of those boots on the ground trips to find myself a good lawyer. I actually had 2 lawyers in Costa Rica, a straight lawyer and a crooked lawyer. You longtime listeners heard me tell that story already. Back then, that was the way to go. Which just reinforces the fact that you have to plan. You have to get some boots on the ground. You don't want to be in a bad spot like the day after a hurricane and there's no power and there's a riot at Walmart. Speaking of Walmart, when you're deciding on your plan B and you finally come down for a boots on the ground trip, do by all means visit the local supermarket chains and not the Walmarts. Then again, you just might want to go to Walmart to see if they've got everything your Walmart has. And believe me, they do and more. Anyway, do visit the local supermarket chains. There will be many of them. And if you find most of the goods are imported, you know that country is totally dependent on other countries and importation. So read the labels. See where the stuff's coming from. Even if your Spanish really sucks, the country of origin you'll recognize. In other words, you'll really want to move to a place where the local supermarkets are stocking mostly local items. Otherwise, you'll be in the same fix when the reset button gets pushed up in the States. If a store stocks mostly imported items, or in the case of the States, items from 7 states away, after a crisis, within 2 or 3 days, the shelves will be bare. But you knew that already, right? Oh, and another thing, on your boots on the ground fact-finding excursion, you'll want to check out some of the local hardware stores, too, to find out the level of the products available. And, of course, check out the cost of that stuff, too, as compared to what you pay for it up in the States. And also, it's very important when you have boots on the ground to visit a private hospital, check out a few doctors, look for some health food stores. Not a GNC. They're all over the place down here, but what a ripoff, huh? And check out those big produce markets and go to local restaurants, not McDonald's or Taco Bell, to see what fresh local foods are available. So in the end, don't worry if other people think it's a crazy decision you've made. For me, it was the best thing I've ever done. But what about you? What's your reason for wanting a plan B? You want adventure? You want to invest in a part of the world that's actually in a growth phase? Do you want to be buffered against the reset that's surely going to happen up in the first world and soon? Are you thinking about coming down because you know in the future you won't be able to afford first world living? Or are you going ahead with your plan B because you've got a long list of reasons you want to leave? Is it maybe that you're becoming more and more depressed with the way things are turning out up there and you just have to leave for reasons of sanity and health? Well, you can always follow the herd and suck it up and stay where you are. If you do, I hope you're an optimist. Not many left, you know. Or keep pushing ahead with that plan B. First step, get some high-quality boots on the ground. We're not talking about an all-inclusive trip to Cancun or Costa Rica either. Best way to do that, of course, is to get the fire hose treatment at my July 2018 Expat Insider Seminar. Once again, in and around Guatemala, Central America, 5,000 feet above sea level, right in the middle of the Altiplano. So to get all the info and the seminar sign-up details, just go to www.thenewexpat.com and click on Johnny's seminar link. I've got the early bird discount specials going, so do take advantage of those deals. And remember, if you sign up for the seminar, you and I will be doing a one-on-one phone consultation call. That way you can get in all the questions you might have about the seminar and anything else you want to talk about. Your plan B, doctors, lawyers, hospitals, insurance, banking, shipping your pets down, housing, rentals, land, utilities, internet, anything. You've been listening to the Expat Files Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy. Nos vemos.